asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Electricity is coming back and shops are reopening in some parts of Indonesia devastated by last week's earthquake and tsunami. But people in more remote areas still lack basic supplies like food and water, with aid only trickling in. FSN correspondent Bruce Harrison is in Palopo on the island of Sulawesi.
The main difficulty has been damaged infrastructure to these other hard-hit areas like the city of Donggala. I've driven the roads into the city of Palu, another hard-hit area, many times over this week, and we're hearing now from the government that the roads to the east, south, and west of Palu have reopened, and that's allowing a lot of aid and other supplies necessary to the people there that are so desperate to help smooth things out and ease some of the chaos in that city.
Hundreds of protesters have been arrested in Washington after demonstrations against President Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh. Republicans say an FBI report exonerated Mr. Kavanaugh over sexual assault allegations he denies. The Senate will hold a procedural vote on his nomination to the highest court in the US later. Consumer giant Unilever says it's dropping plans to move its headquarters from London to the Netherlands. It announced in March it would stop having two bases in London and Rotterdam and move all its HQ operations to the Dutch city. But investors said the move could force UK shareholders to dispose of their shares and cause a slump in the firm's value. Unilever makes products from Dove soap to pot noodles to Marmite and Ben & Jerry's ice cream. Ben Mastel from Seven Investment Management says its position on London's FTSE 100 index of leading shares appears to be keeping it in the UK.
This was over a big move to simplify its corporate structure, but it appears that Unilever, they make things like Marmite, Dove soap, lots of other UK household brands. They've actually scrapped that deal. Basically, it's not been very popular with shareholders. Unilever is one of the biggest firms on the FTSE 100. It's valued about 124 billion, and the fear was that because they'd have to delist those FTSE 100 shares, it would cause all sorts of selling pressures. So they are still looking at potential opportunities, but for now, the 130-year-old company is going to remain on the FTSE 100.
Prince Harry and a puffing and panting Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison will climb the Sydney Harbour Bridge to officially welcome Invictus Games athletes. From Melbourne, Arthur Stevens has the details.
The Duke and Duchess of Sussex say they want to meet as many Australians as possible when they tour the country this month. Prince Harry and the Duchess Meghan will visit Sydney, Melbourne, Dubbo in New South Wales and Queensland's Fraser Island on their October 16th to 28th tour. To officially welcome the Invictus Games to Sydney, Prince Harry, the Prime Minister, and athletes will scale the Harbour Bridge to plant the Invictus flag. Mr. Morrison says he suspects the Prince will get up there a little quicker than he will, and as well as the other athletes who will be going up there too.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Right, thanks, Ollie. Welcome to Friday's programme. It's a show that's in lieu of a show I didn't do on Monday. It's not a regular thing for me to be with you on Fridays, but I'm here. How you doing? Just after midday, UK time, as I am live as I record this. Hope you're having a good day. You're looking forward to the weekend. I think I've got an excellent show lined up for you this lunchtime, so I do.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Yeah, if I do say so myself, like, you know the way it is, right? Let's crack on then.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Right, a little bit later this hour, Mark Windows joins me live from Bristol. Well, I think he might be in Glastonbury today, but he'll be in Bristol tomorrow. And we're going to talk about an event going ahead there tomorrow afternoon called The Bigger Picture. Mark will be speaking there, as will Piers Corbyn. I'm going to give you all the information you need to know about that. There are other speakers there as well. We'll be speaking to Sandy Adams, I think. Sandy will be speaking there as well. The Bigger Picture in Bristol tomorrow. And tickets are available for that through windowsontheworld.net. Very good value and a great way to spend an afternoon. We'll talk about the issues they will be discussing tomorrow when Mark joins me around about half past the hour. Around about that time, we'll have Mark on then. And I think Sandy Adams will join me as well. Right, before that, though, I was going to round up the big stories of the week, but there's enough going on today that I can get into without doing a review of the week thus far. As usual, if there's something you'd like to tell me, you can do it on Twitter. Tweet at Richie Allen Show with an opinion and I'll be sure to read it out. So I will. Now, so much I want to tell you in the next 30 minutes that I better crack on. So I woke up this morning very early, at a very early start, 5 o'clock, couldn't sleep, got up at 5, went out for my run, came back and began to read the papers. Most of them led today with the alleged attempt, by the Russian agents to hack the International Chemical Weapons Watchdog, the OPCW, in The Hague. Remember this yesterday? The Russians apparently got a little car, drove outside the OPCW, had a little antenna on it, and from the back seat of the car, attempted to hack the OPCW to prevent it from investigating the Salisbury poisonings. So all the papers lead with that today, and all the other allegations, because everybody was piling in on the Russians yesterday. Front page of the Daily Telegraph today, Russia's cyber raiders foiled in humiliation for Putin. That's the headline. On the Sun, you gotta love the Sun pun. The Sun pun is, it's the Novichokle brothers. The Novichokle brothers. The Sun says Vladimir Putin's spies are a laughingstock. Carry on spying is the headline for the I newspaper. The London Times says the men were, quote, caught in the act. They're piling in. The Financial Times says the accusations made in Washington and in The Hague underline the alarming extent to which Russia is trying to take over the world. But the Daily Mail, to be fair to it, and it's such a rotten paper at times, it is, it's such a race-baiting paper at times, but at times it does brilliant work. The Daily Mail is, it smells a bit. It's, the Daily Mail thinks that this might smell just a little bit. It says that it's a bit ham-fisted, more Johnny English than George Smiley. Yeah, good stuff. Right, all the papers basically saying that we are engaged now, or excuse me, the papers are saying that Russia is engaged in all-out war. War? The Russians? Waging war? Who's waging war? Israel? The United States? France? The UK? Yeah, they wage war all the bloody time. Never stop raining missiles and bombs down on third world countries. Russia's not waging any war on anybody. It might be taking the fight to Islamic extremists in Syria, but it's not waging war on anybody. Anyway, the Russian ambassador to the UK is a guy called Alexander Yakovenko. We've heard from him on this programme before. Alexander Yakovenko spoke last night and, well, ridiculed the stories in the UK and Western media. We should be hearing from him. What happened? Let's try that again. Alexander Yakovenko. Yeah, we've got him now.
We believe that this kind of statements are reckless, and I explain why. First of all, these statements are not supported by any evidence. This is first. Second, we hear this kind of allegations for quite a time. And in December 2017, when former Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson was in Moscow, Sergei Lavrov, Russian Foreign Minister, offered him to have a consultations on the cybersecurity, and he said that if you have any questions in connection with the alleged Russian activity, we can put the specialists from two countries, sit down on the table and discuss professionally what are the concerns of the British side. The British refused to do this, and instead of that, they launched reckless attacks on us without any evidence. This
very mature, that. I know Russia's enemies will laugh at that and say, well, that's impossible. It's impossible for representatives of the UK's intelligence community to go to Moscow and to meet with one or two representatives of the Russian intelligence community. But why is it impossible? Doesn't Yakovenko have a very good point there? Why don't you send some folks over here and you show us the so-called irrefutable evidence that proves that we've been trying to hack all of these various organisations? Let's be adult about it. Show us the proof that you have, and if we're banged to rights, we'll say we're banged to rights. If not, you'll just have to go about your way? You see, these are the questions, of course, that the UK media should be putting to the so-called experts whom they trot out on the hour to blame Russia for everything.
This is quite a vague story. You know, this is the name of the Russian intelligence organization, you know, a few names that are expelled and all these things. But the beef, I mean, this substance is not basically given. So we're going to ask the British side to give more information on that. And we're going to repeat our call. If you have some information, please share this information. And we're ready to sit down and talk.
Don't hold your breath there, Alexander. By the way, thanks to RT for the audio there. Climate scaremongering today, dear listener. 10 minutes past midday. It is Friday, October 5th. Climate change scaremongering. Today was a big day for today. All the newspapers carrying stories that London could be under threat of sinking as sea levels rise. They're painting this picture. It's like the Roland, is it Roland Emmerich? I always get names wrong. I know his surname was Emmerich, the guy who made The Day After Tomorrow. What a pile of bollocks that was. Even though I like Dennis Quaid. I've always liked old Dennis Quaid. But it was a load of bollocks. Jake Gyllenhaal was in it too. They're portraying this future where London is going to be absolutely flooded and there'll be nowhere to run. Now, the Independent newspaper today says, London under threat of sinking as global warming makes sea levels rise, new report finds. What new report? You're going to laugh when you hear this. Sea levels are expected to rise by over 40 centimetres unless global warming is limited to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, the more ambitious target set by the Paris Climate Agreement. An analysis released by Christian Aid as nations meet in Korea to finalise a major UN climate change report concerning the 1.5 degrees Celsius target looks at some of the coastal cities most at risk. Christian Aid! Run! Start selling up in London now, it's all over. Climate change could act as a threat multiplier to existing problems such as sinking ground and subsidence, water extraction and bad planning. It's all doom and gloom. So Sky News then brought a guy called Bob Ward on. Bob looks like he'd be better off down a market, down Camden Lock on a Saturday, flogging a bit of tat. But they brought him on to tell us that this is all true, it's all going to happen. Climate change researcher Bob Ward. Bob is full of shit and shinola. Bob was asked, is it really this bad? Is it, Bob?
Well, London's been sinking for many thousands of years. During the last ice age, ice sheets came down to just north of London. And when they receded, the crust of the earth sprung back up where the ice sheets had been. But ahead of the ice sheets, the crust had bulged around London, and that since the ice sheets have gone, it's been sinking. So we've been sinking in London and in southeast England for thousands of years at the rate of millimetres per year. But what is now making this more difficult is that global sea levels are also rising.
Line number one.
Rising as a result of climate change.
Line number two.
Change, the melting of the polar ice sheets, particularly in the polar regions. And that combination means that London and many other cities that are exposed to coastal tides are vulnerable to the impacts. So in London, we're protected by the Thames flood barrier, which was built after 1953's great flood along the East Coast when there was a big storm, and the potential for sending a large surge up the Thames that could flood London was recognised, and they built the flood barrier. But later on in this century, we're going to have to discuss the building of a new barrier to protect us, because sea levels will have risen so far that the current barrier will be insufficient.
Nonsense. Utter nonsense. And it's at times like these that whatever little bit of hair you have left on your head, and I don't have very much, must be said, you start to pull out, because accredited fully, peer-reviewed fully, internationally renowned fully, scientists like, let me name one or two of them, Niels Axel Mörner, for example, have proven that there has been no rise in sea levels on planet Earth in over 55, 60 years. It is a lie. There are fluctuations occasionally, but the mean levels haven't changed in nearly 60 years. This is true. I wouldn't say this unless it was true. He's a liar, is Bob Ward. Does he know he's lying? He might not do. To be fair to old Bob, he might believe it. And of course, if he believes it, he's not really lying. But the central fact stated that sea levels are going to rise and have been rising is a lie, because it's not true, dear listener. So when is all this going to happen then? When is London going to be pretty much uninhabitable?
Well, it depends what happens in the long term. I think
what do you mean, Bob? You just said a second ago it's going to happen. What do you mean it depends what happens in the long term?
Well protected for the next few decades, but it largely depends on whether we're successful in tackling climate change. So the big drivers of sea level rise are the big polar ice sheets in Greenland and West Antarctica.
Which are not shrinking.
Which between them hold enough ice to raise sea levels 13 metres around the world. Now, that's not going to happen overnight, but the projections over the next couple of centuries...
Yeah, bullshit. He says 30 metres. Imagine a 30-metre sea level rise. Now, this is nonsense. It's never going to happen. It isn't. How do you know, Richie? What do you know? You're not an academic. Well, I am, but not in geology and not in climatology. I will accept that. Because the most respected and the most experienced scientists in the world say it's not going to happen. Let's just pretend it does happen, that there's a 30-metre sea level rise. Would you believe that in the past there have been sea level rises on planet Earth of over 1,500 metres? Let me remind you what Ian Plimer, renowned geologist, told the House of Commons only a few years ago. This is real truth.
Climates have always changed. Climate changes in the past have been greater and faster than anything we experience in our lifetime. And sea levels have always changed. Not by the modest couple of millimetres that people are having conniptions about, but we've had in the past sea level changes of only 1,500 metres.
Absolutely true. 1,500 metre sea level changes in the past. Massive weather phenomenon that has lasted for decades and decades in the past pre-industrial revolution. All of this is true. All of it ignored by the mainstream media, which shamelessly peddles the climate change scaremongering bullshit. That is, if we don't stop what we're doing now, the planet won't be livable, won't be inhabitable in 40 or 50 or 70 years' time. It's nonsense. What else does Plimer say?
That's a sea level change. And if we look back in the history of time, the atmosphere once had a very large amount of carbon dioxide in it. It's now got less than 0.04%.
Correct. At one time, there was vastly more CO2 in the atmosphere than there is now. Again, the climate whoremongers, the climate change fear and whoremongers, pedalmongers, don't want to deal with that salient and totally irrefutable fact. Why not? Why not discuss that? Why was there vastly more carbon dioxide in our atmosphere in the past than there is now?
Where did that carbon dioxide go to? It went into chalk, limestone, shells and life. And we've been sequestering carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere for only 2,500 million years.
Absolutely. It's in the seas, it's in the seabeds, it's in the chalk, it's in the rocks. And it's sequestered out of the atmosphere. That's where it goes. And there is less now than there was previously. In fact, when he says there are dangerously low levels of CO2, in our atmosphere. Again, the statistics, even by the climate mongers, even by their own statistics, Plimer is proved to be absolutely spot on. And I can't not mention Piers Corbyn on this, who for me is the UK's undisputed expert on why the climate change fearmongers are completely wrong. Check out Piers Corbyn, go to weatheraction.org, I think it is, online, or .com. WeatherAction Piers Corbyn. You'll find it anyway. Paul Craven tweets, Richie, no wonder the planet is warming up. The amount of pish and wind that comes out of your average politician is quite staggering. Liz tweets, the oceans cover approximately 70% of Earth. If there was melting of ice caps, it would be the same as piddling in a swimming pool. Excellent, Liz. William tweets, they should build a barrier that means only Westminster and the Lords chambers get flooded. That will solve a thing or two as well. Cartoon Drunk says, is the global warming hoax to bring in a one world government and to stop poor countries developing by slapping punitive carbon taxes on them to stop them developing industrially? Yes, is the short answer. Of course it is. Of course it is. We've heard the global policy institutes. We've heard all the think tanks. We've heard the round table groups. The Institute of Economic Affairs, all these big, you know, so-called think tanks, but they're basically policy drivers saying things like, no longer can countries do what countries want to do. If country B is doing something internally that might harm the atmosphere, which means that it screws up the rest of the world, well, then the world has the right to interfere in the business of country B and even operate within country B's borders. That's exactly right. That's where all this leads, ultimately. 21 minutes past the hour. Mark Windows joins me in just over 10 minutes' time. I want to get through one more story before we welcome Mark back to the programme, though. It's a very interesting story. Reading this today in the Hollywood Reporter. I get around, so I do. I read all these papers all over the world. So a new California law requiring women on corporate boards could have a Read it again, Richie. Punctuation is bad. Not mine, but the punctuation of the writer. A new California law which requires women on corporate boards could have a scattershot effect on entertainment companies. A few already are in compliance with the new mandates, others are not, and many of the largest are based elsewhere beyond the reach of the law. So in California, a new law has come in that corporate boards must contain, on those boards, there must be a female presence. Why? Well, it's legislation that was sponsored by State Senator Hannah Beth Jackson. And in California, it's now required of any public company that they have at least one woman on its board of directors by the end of next year. By the end of 2021, the requirement gets tougher. There will be a requirement of 3 female directors if the board size is 6 or more. So by the end of 2021, it's going to be the law in California that if your public company is headquartered there, at least half your board must be women. Wow. And if you don't do what you're told, violations can result in fines of up to $300,000 per year. What's going on? Well, here's a couple of female voices on this. Jennifer Breeden is a Milwaukee-based lawyer. She's not happy about it. But Kate Smurthwaite, who's a feminist and comedian and sometimes writes for The Guardian, she's absolutely thrilled. Let's hear Jennifer Breeden, the lawyer, first. She's not happy at all about this.
Creates discrimination now against other people in favor of women who might not even be qualified. I mean, you're talking about putting one woman in place there, and now we're having to mandate that where there are many women in the workplace that have been working hard. So rather than hoping for or encouraging in the workplace there to be equal treatment of women who do a good job, now we're just regulating and mandating it, which is undoubtedly going to cause anarchy in the workplace, is going to cause dissension among people, perhaps amongst other women who have been working hard, wondering why this woman got chosen just to meet a certain quota.
And you won't be surprised to hear that I agree with Jennifer Breeden. Right, let's hear from feminist writer and comic Kate Smurthwaite. She thinks it's a great idea that by the end of 2021, public companies headquartered in California must have on their board, half of them must be women, if there are more than 6 people on the board. Kate even, Smurthwaite.
I think it's absolutely ridiculous to suggest that there is not a single woman qualified for the board of any public company in California. I think we all know that there are loads of women who are super well qualified, and the question should be, why haven't they been appointed to those boards already?
Why don't you ask them? Find some of these women that are brilliant businesswomen who work in public companies, and why don't you ask them to their face? Ask them. You might be surprised at what they tell you. You might not be. You might not, but just ask them, hey, why do you think it is that you haven't made it to the boardroom? I don't know. Anyway, what else does she say?
Why have we put up with this outdated, you know, white male boys club for so long? I think there are lots of people on boards in California and all over the world who aren't qualified, and I'm afraid to say the vast majority of them are men.
Back to Jennifer Breeden, the lawyer who is opposed to compelling companies to put women on boards. Jennifer Breeden.
It only causes tension to grow against women, against the very party that they're trying to eliminate discrimination over. And so that's going to undoubtedly cause backfiring, a lot more animosity against women, not just from other men in the workplace who have been working very hard, but from other women in the workplace who might not be chosen to fit this one woman quota type thing, from women who aren't going to be doing that. And so, you know, it's causing dissension. It's really going against it, and it's going to continue to backfire against that until we change who we are intrinsically as Americans in the workplace, allowing equal rights because they are deserving of it and not because the law mandates.
Yeah, good stuff, Jennifer Breeden there. And finally, Kate Smurthwaite, again, feminist Guardian writer and comic. She's going to annoy you now. Prepare to be triggered. Prepare to be properly triggered.
Absolutely. California should and will, on the back of the success of this legislation, add in further legislation that mandates that there be a person of colour on board, and then two people of colour, and so on and so forth. I think that's absolutely, these are not conflicting issues. It shouldn't be the case that women and people of colour, who incidentally, many women are also people of colour, but we shouldn't feel like there's a sort of diversity spot and we all have to fight for it. We should feel like we're all part of a movement that's working towards better balance on board and working towards a future which actually where companies like this belong to all of us, not to a tiny, you know, pale male and stale corporate elite, which unfortunately seems to be a sort of, you know, a club which no one can break at the moment.
I don't agree with positive discrimination. Never have, never will. I don't believe we live in a meritocracy. I don't. Have women been put down and have women been discriminated against in companies around the world? Of course they have. You'd be an idiot if you didn't think so. But positive discrimination is not the way to redress that balance. It isn't. It just isn't. Because it's discrimination. It's exactly that which you hope to eradicate. It is discriminating. It is prioritising one person because of her gender over somebody else who might actually be more qualified to do the job. It is ridiculous. And it goes to a very bad place. Before long, we should have transgender representation on the board. We should have non-binary. Gingers. We should have ginger-haired people. What about baldy guys like your man Alan, the dickhead on the radio? What about him? We should have baldy people represented. Baldy people are a group. Eventually, we will divide ourselves into millions and millions of splinter identity groups that there won't be room for us all to be represented. Starts with education. Starts with education. When you've got children, when you have children, when you are responsible for children, if you are gently coaxing your children and guiding them to think or helping them to find their way to understanding that really it shouldn't matter what you look like, it shouldn't matter how you sound, what God you worship, what colour your skin is, if you happen to be the best qualified, you should get the job. That's the end of it. This is silliness. And I would imagine corporations in California will be queuing up to sue the state legislature and to say, no, you're not going to tell us that we must have three women on a six-person plus, six-man-plus board in the future and all the rest of it. Dangerous times, folks. These are dangerous times. And I'm going to finish with this before we welcome Mark Windows and Sandy. A Question Time airs every Thursday on BBC One. It is a political panel debate show presented by David Dimbleby. But Dimbleby is on his way out, no doubt, to be replaced by a woman who might be the best person for the job. Don't think I'm saying it's not possible. Of course it is. But how will we know if the BBC decides, well, we've got to have a woman now? Because we've had men presenting Question Time for years. Should be a woman. Well, again, why don't you get them all to audition? And why don't you close your eyes to their gender and to their race and say, who's the best at it? Who's the best at attacking these bullshit politicians? Who's the best at holding together the debate show for an hour? Mary, is it brilliant? Couldn't give a shit whether she's a woman, whether she's a trans, non-binary, black, white, Hispanic. Couldn't give a shit. She's good at it. Get her to do it. But the BBC won't do that. They'll put a woman in instead of Dimbleby. Anyway, on the programme last night, which came from Birmingham, there was a young man in the audience, and the young man said, and it is important to note, they were talking about Brexit, and they were talking about not prioritising EU migrants in the future. And the young white man in the audience clearly said that, in his opinion, Britain is one of the least racist societies in the world. Now, listen up. He never said that racism doesn't exist in Britain. He never said that. He said that, in his opinion, Britain is one of the least racist societies in the world. There was a guy on the panel called George Mpanga. Until today, I'd never heard of George. I must be racist too, I suppose, because I never heard of him. George Mpanga. Well, he's a poet, apparently, George. He wasn't happy because the white guy said that Britain is one of the least racist societies in the world. George was triggered. And also triggered was a woman in the audience who I am presuming was Muslim because she was wearing a hijab. Now remember, white man says Britain one of the least racist societies. George Mpanga and Muslim woman completely triggered. Have a listen to this.
Sure. Oh, phew! Thank you so much. So I didn't get stopped by police sitting outside of my mum's house earlier this year.
I didn't get stopped sitting outside my mum's house earlier this year. How the fuck does he know that, the white guy in the audience? How is it relevant? He said the UK is one of the least racist societies in the world. But identitarian George Mpanga, oh, me. Oh, so I didn't get spoken to by the police when I was sitting outside my door. What's the white guy going to fucking say? What could he say to that? Did you, George? Well, I'm sorry, mate, if that happened to you. Bear in mind, I never said racism doesn't exist. I just said we're one of the least racist societies. Triggered, George. Triggered. Oh, I didn't get spoken to.
That didn't happen to me. And oh, thank you. I should have just explained that to the police officer.
It's too funny that you're a white man.
Now, listen to the Muslim woman who thinks it's funny that a white man is saying that there's no racism, which he didn't say. He said the UK is one of the least racist societies. Listen to the fishwife. Listen carefully.
My man saying that. It's funny that you're a
police officer.
Here we go.
It's funny that you're a white man saying that. Saying that there's no racism in this country.
He never said there was no racism in the country, and Dimbleby didn't give him a chance to repeat that. He said it's one of the least racist societies in the world. But the fishwife is not finished.
How are you going to experience it? You're a white man.
Yeah.
All right. You're saying that British people are the least racist. Hold on. How am I racist?
Ask the white girls that have been raped by grooming gangs from Pakistani communities about racism. I'd have loved to have been in that audience.
How am I racist? You're not the one walking down the street and being screamed at. That's not happening to you.
And what you get with the fishwives and with people like George Mpanga is you get bullshit. You're not the one being screamed at when you're walking down the streets. You see, a good presenter, if David Dimbleby was any good, you would say, when were you screamed at walking down the streets? Who did it to you? What did they say? And did you report it to the police? Race baiting, eh? Divide and conquer. Alive and well in the UK in 2018. This is the Richie Allen Show. I'm back in 90 seconds and joining me is Mark Windows. You don't want to miss this, folks. Looking forward to catching up with Mark. And Sandy Adams is going to join in as well. They're along with Piers Corbyn, appearing in Bristol tomorrow at an event that begins at midday in Broad Street in Bristol. Tickets available at windowsontheworld.net and at Eventbrite as well. We'll find out what's going on there when we come back in a quick minute. And I will read some tweets as well. Keep them coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Quick break, back in 60 seconds.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. they become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Right, welcome back to the programme. 25 minutes to one. It is this Friday lunchtime, October 5th, 2018. My name is Richie Allen. We're live on Fab Radio 2 now. Tune in radio, triggerwarning.tv, the Cogent radio app. And did I say richieallen.co.uk? I probably did. My guest this hour, my guests, but let me introduce Mark Window. You know about Mark, of course, whom I've known for several years now. Top journalist and broadcaster. You can hear him every weekend on fabradiointernational.com here in Manchester. But you can find out about his programme by going to windowsontheworld.net. He's joined today by Sandy Adams. We'll talk to Sandy as well. They're going to be in Bristol tomorrow at an event which kicks off at midday tomorrow in Bristol called The Bigger Picture. And I'm going to tweet out links to where you can get tickets for that. All the information can be found at windowsontheworld.net and eventbrite.co.uk if you look for The Bigger Picture. I think it's £8 a ticket. They might correct me, Sandy and Mark, but that's absolutely, I mean, that's amazing value. Piers Corbyn will be there, Mark will be there, and Sandy Adams. Mark Windows, welcome back.
Hi, Richie.
Thanks for coming on. Good to be chatting with you this Friday lunchtime. You're in Glastonbury now, but you're off to Bristol tomorrow.
That's exactly right, Richie, and thanks for that great introduction. Yes, we're doing the talk, The Bigger Picture, which we're taking around the country, and we're trying to get people in their local area to take this up and organise their own events so it becomes a kind of people's event. And we want to take it round to people who are interested and want to find out about this information, yeah.
Great stuff. Now, you've got Piers Corbyn, you've got Sandy Adams. Sandy will be joining us at some stage, I believe. You're going to take this around the country. What are you going to be discussing there? What are the types of things that people living in communities are completely unaware of, but that they need to know? And I must just give a shout out, by the way, to an old friend of yours whom I met for the first time the other evening. I've heard her before on your programmes, but Deborah Tavares was on the programme with me the other evening, an old friend of yours, and she was talking about some of the things I think that will come up when you talk tomorrow. So what can people expect tomorrow?
That's absolutely right, Richie. I spoke to Deborah about 18 months ago, and I need to get back in touch with her because she has some amazing information. And what unifies the whole of what we're talking about in this country and in America and indeed the world is a global action plan implemented at a local level. More and more people are seeing that. Deborah reports on it in ways which are absolutely broad and quite frightening. What we're doing is we're bringing exactly the same information, but how it relates to people in this country at the present time, where people can see these things being implemented at a local level, how it's done, why it's done, who's doing it, and more importantly, what we can do about it. That's the most important thing, because we have to have a solution.
Absolutely. So how would you define, for somebody hearing this for the first time, global action plan? What, I suppose in two parts, Mark, because there is their definition of it, what they want it to be defined as, but then there is the reality behind it. So what is it supposed to be, according to them, the architects of it?
Well, actually, the Global Action Plan is implemented at a local level, and it affects all infrastructure in the world which affects people. I want to read out, before we carry on, because you brought up a very good point here, a quote that came out, and this was way after 1992 when the Rio Earth Summit basically put this Agenda 21 into action. And it was a quote from a Russian general, Petrov, and he stated that the result of the 1992 Rio Earth Summit was nothing happened. The banks and major corporations got together in 2002 and said that we will look after the infrastructure of all rich and poor countries if you hand over the infrastructure which affects all people to us, meaning banks, basically the World Bank and corporations. So corporations and banks got together, and what we're seeing now is a result of that, because the implementation of this has been rapid. Most people now see what's happening with so-called regeneration. We've covered it in great detail, and that's why Piers is on board, and also Sandy, because they have huge background in this and can describe exactly what it is and how it's been brought into implementation. So basically, we're talking about something that affects all people, and it's done with certain principles, and it's done in certain ways. Basically, we're talking about, to put it very simply, you could call it a management concept. It's a way of governance, a way of implementing governance, which is global and which has a universal kind of template. But when you get to the point of talking about the United Nations, people will go, oh, it's a conspiracy theory. Now, I want to read you out something, because this is absolutely typical of what your local councillors and people who are implementing this global action plan will say. Now, I sent a long show, which about 2 hours long, which featured housing campaigners, including Gordon Peters, who challenged the Haringey Development Vehicle. Now, the Haringey Development Vehicle was this thing that was brought in, which basically took over the infrastructure in Haringey. This has happened in every borough. We talked about it previously, Richie, with companies like Lendlease and Bechtel, basically running the infrastructure, which is what I've just been referring to. Now, I sent this, and it was about the concerns of local residents at a meeting at the epicentre in Leytonstone to Clyde Lokes, cabinet member for the environment, who is an absolute, and I will say this, enviro-fascist. Maybe fascist is the wrong word, because that has many different interpretations, but what he's doing is bringing in all these policies. Now, I sent him that show, which featured the concerns of local residents about regeneration. I said, please listen to this important interview, Clyde, and respond accordingly. You seriously need to respond to the public you serve. And it's called London's Dystopia, Public Winning Fight Back. His response, hello, Mark. Thank you for your email and taking the time to contact me. However, as I don't subscribe to the hugely discredited and laughable conspiracy theories that suggest that there is an Agenda 21 takeover of the world, I'm afraid I find it of no value whatsoever.
That was his response, Mark. That was his response. His response was to talk about conspiracy theories, effectively.
Yes. So I asked him which of the 40 chapters of Agenda 21 were a conspiracy theory, and I challenged him to a public debate. And I also told him the truth about what had happened in Haringey and asked him which part of the factual information presented by people who were housing officers, including a housing officer from Hackney and Gordon Peters, was a conspiracy theory. No response. So this is what people are up against. They're up against a stonewalling. And basically, these people will not debate. The reason they won't debate is because they can't. They know that they will lose.
Well, absolutely right. Now, if I can give the Global Action Plan for Dummies, I'm not so self-deprecating, maybe as I sound, but I like to simplify it for myself. We're talking here, and I asked you this a few months ago, and you answered it brilliantly. We're talking about a one world government by the back door, basically, through the local authorities of cities all around the world, all working to the same blueprint, and with the same companies like Bechtel and others warming their way in to take over these regeneration projects and other projects. Is that oversimplifying it?
No, it's a corporate infrastructure that's in place. You could call it a shadow government, but then people go, oh, that sounds like a conspiracy theory. Well, in actual fact, what we're going to talk about with these talks is how...
Right, we just lost Mark momentarily there. I don't know why that is. Let's have a look. It says 16 minutes to the top of the hour. Mark has dropped out. Let me reconnect there. Yeah, I should have turned the fader down. Let me reconnect there, and hopefully he'll be there and we won't drop out again. It happens sometimes. Right, Mark, you dropped out momentarily. I just asked you about the oversimplification of my description of what's happening, and you were answering that, and then you just dropped out. Go ahead.
Right, yes. Well, Peter and Sandy are very important in this because Sandy has this background of face-to-face with Agenda 21, what it actually is in the local community. Piers has been a housing activist since the 1970s, so he can see very clearly what's going on, how local governance has been taken over. And this is very important, and this is where we get into talking about change agents and all the rest of it. But basically, we're talking about a corporate infrastructure that is managed by people who are unelected. That's what we're talking about, really.
And all roads lead to the financial institutions you talked about, the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund.
Yes. I'd just like to bring Sandy in here to see what her interpretation is, because we're...
Mark has just dropped out again there. The connection is terrible there. I don't know what's going on there. I might have to give him a call on his mobile. There was a problem with...
Yeah.
Oh, you're okay. There. You dropped out again. I don't know what's happening. There was a brief connection issue there, and I lost you for a second. But just before we lost the connection, you were about to introduce Sandy, whom I believe is here now. Sandy, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Hi, Richie. I'm very well, thank you.
It's lovely to have you here. Lovely to meet you, and lovely to have you here. You've been following this for a long time, going back nearly 10 years. And one of the ways that you explain what's been happening, and I think this is brilliant, Sandy, I'm not blowing smoke at you. You refer to the flooding issues that the country has experienced for a number of years now, and Somerset, and how that was handled. So what is the Global Action Plan? If you want to use that example, how can you explain it to people in terms of how can they understand how it affects them? How does it affect them in real terms? Go ahead.
In real terms, well, I found out about Agenda 21 when the levels flooded, and I traced it right back, and I realised there was something horribly wrong because there was so little help available to the local people when it flooded, and I traced it back to the Ramsar Treaty of 1971, where there was an implementation put in to flood certain areas for the benefit of the wetlands, birds, RSPB. And I thought, this is very odd, because people actually suffered really badly during this flood. And so I just did my research and realised that it went right back to the Rio summit. And I, you know, obviously we all know what Maurice Strong is all about. I mean, he worked for the Rockefellers for many years. Yeah. He organised that summit, and it was all to do with creating this idea that, in fact, anthropogenic global warming had to be addressed. And that we would, you know, everything would be carbon tax, basically. They got 171 countries to sign up to United Nations Agenda 21. It was basically, you are all saving the planet if you sign up to this. And all the heads of those countries up to it. And it is actually fake environmentalism. It's a Trojan horse to bring in global control of humanity, really. And that sounds like a conspiracy theory, but when you go and look into exactly what this fake environmentalism is doing, it's putting people in a position of saying, well, do you want to save the planet or not? And if you don't, then you're a bad person. You've got to adhere to these policies, and these policies are actually big.
Bloody connection. Sorry, Sandy. Yeah. Sorry, the connection just dropped just slightly there at the end. I'm worried about this connection.
I am too. I'll see if I can get a booster or something to boost it up.
Yeah, in the meantime, it's brilliantly explained by you. It really is, in a way that I can understand it and people can understand it. Because what these entities, let's call them, these financial institutions, have struggled with in the past, they've struggled with sovereignty. Not just national sovereignty, but obviously local sovereignty, local authorities, councils. And they've had to find a way around that. And it's brilliant how you've explained it. And I've been reading about you this morning in advance of you coming on with Mark. it's very difficult in the old way. If we ever had democracy, I don't know. But previously, it was very difficult for these entities to take control of everything, to take energy, to take roads, to take rail, to take water, to take natural gases, take all of that. Very difficult because of natural sovereignty, because of barriers and boundaries. But what you've described is a brilliant blueprint for them to just basically bypass all of the constraints that they would have had historically.
Absolutely. Amazing, that's right? Just what they've done. Yeah. It's a Trojan horse, yeah.
And nobody's talking about it, Sandy, except in except people like yourself and people like Mark and Piers Corbyn. But nobody will ever hear a word about this on Newsnight or on BBC News at 6. Yeah. Why is that?
Go on, Mark.
Well, basically, we have this term useful idiots. And what we've got is this narrow opinion corridor of accepted belief. And anything outside that is demonized. And this is exactly how it works. We go into this in the talks, Richie. I talk about the two lies that the public are placed between, lie one and lie two. Lie one could be atheism, lie two could be organized religion. We also talk about the Hegelian dialectic, which is thesis, antithesis, and synthesis in the end. And all of this stuff that we're fed is to promote this synthesis. This synthesis is now basically this area of political correctness. Before we carry on, I just wanted you to hear one of these quotes. Now, this is about the climate change agenda. This is from Otmar Edenhofer, who's a world expert, an IPCC panelist, director of the Mercator Research Institute on Global Commons and Climate Change. And he is the daddy of a lot of this environmental policy. This is a direct quote. He says, "One must say clearly that we distribute de facto the world's wealth by climate policy. One has to free oneself from the illusion that international climate policy is environmental policy. This has almost nothing to do with environmental policy anymore." And I have many more quotes from people in Greenpeace and lobbying groups. What we have is this accepted opinion corridor, which only includes preferred lobbying groups. And that's incredibly important with all this.
Really important. I've had an email from Jen Lawrence, presumably not the Jennifer Lawrence. Can't be that. We can't be that. We can't be doing that well today. But Jen Lawrence, she's living in Essex and wants to ask both of you, is the academisation of schools, which is the privatisation of education in the country, is that coming from this very place that you're talking about?
Exactly. Yeah. And we look at UNESCO within the talks. Now, education is not complete until attitudes have been changed. This is a UNESCO quote. Mm-hmm. So basically, we've got an education system that is mentoring people into a fake reality, the post-truth world, in fact. And we have all the quotes from the people who've set this up that it is not an environmental agenda. It's basically about control management of population. And we know where that leads. We've talked about that. The thing is about it is that most people can see it when it's pointed out to them. It's just not pointed out to them.
It's just not pointed out. Sandy, just before you come back in, let's sell a few tickets, right? Folks, go to eventbrite.co.uk, windowsontheworld.net, but eventbrite.co.uk, the bigger picture with Piers Corbyn, with Sandy Adams, with Mark Windows in Bristol tomorrow from 12 noon till 6 o'clock at ARC, which is 27 Broad Street in Bristol. There might be tickets on the door. Stay in touch with windowsontheworld.net. Mark will keep you informed as well. Mark is on Twitter. I'm telling you, folks, for the price of a couple of beers, that's all it is. You can do a lot worse than listen to this, because a lot of great researchers talk about the future that we're going to have, and they're brilliant, and all power to them for doing it. What I'm amazed by the two of you today is you're putting the T's, you're crossing the T's and you're dotting the I's. You're showing how it's done in minute detail. And that's brilliant. Sandy, come back in. You were going to say something there.
Yeah, I mean, just the general dumbing down of education, students aren't taught, even, you know, from a very early age, not to think. They are just taught a narrative that is actually being forced upon them. And I'm noticing this in universities. You know, there's no critical thinking going on, because they are literally given what the powers that be want them to believe. And this is a real problem, because you're getting people that just cannot think for themselves. And that's all part of the agenda.
Yes, it's called mentoring, really, Richie. Yeah. And what these people actually become is the future useful idiots and change agents who will be part of this establishment cult, which is being enforced on everyone at a local level. And this is the whole thing with the talks, is that I go into the background of how this has happened. Sandy goes into it further, and then Piers finishes off with what this is basically about, that it's been done on the back of environmentalism, and it's got nothing to do with environmentalism. Mm. Now, I've got some quotes here, Richie, and this is from the talk. This is from Mikhail Gorbachev in 1996. He said, "The threat of environmental crisis will be the international disaster key that will unlock the new world order." Now, this is from Paul Watson, co-founder of Greenpeace. He says, "It doesn't matter what is true. It only matters what people believe is true." Sir John Houghton was the first chairman of the IPCC, which is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which people refer to in many newspapers like The Guardian as a scientific body. It is not a scientific body. They said, unless we announce disasters, no one will listen. Here's one from Christine Stewart, former Canadian Minister for the Environment. "No matter if the science of global warming is all phony, climate change provides the greatest opportunity to bring about justice and equality in the world." By this, she means social justice and social equity, which means loss of all inalienable rights to group consensus.
That's amazing. What you're saying, Mark, is, and Sandy is saying as well, that this non-issue, funnily enough, I was speaking about this in the news roundup earlier on, because you will both know that fear-mongering has reached new levels today. All the television and radio news programmes this morning carrying the story from Christian Aid that London might be under 10 feet of water in 50 or 60 years if people don't, if we don't start to change our ways. It's crazy stuff. I covered that earlier. What you're telling me today is this particular non-issue of climate change, more than any other, is being used to bring about the sort of control that they want, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I've got a quote here from a book. It was actually, I mean, a lot of the policies and the directive of Agenda 21 came from various reports done by the Club of Rome since the 60s, really. And one of the first Club of Rome reports on how humanity will be brought to this stage is by a book called, it's a Club of Rome report called The First Global Revolution, that was published in 1968. And it was by a guy called Alexander King and Bertrand Schneider, who were both members of the Club of Rome at the time, and under Maurice Strong. And it says, because on pages 104 and 105, it says, "Because of the sudden absence of traditional enemies," because obviously it's post-war, "new enemies must be identified. In searching for a new enemy to unite us and formulate a crisis that would unite humanity, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like would fit the bill. All these crises will be caused by human intervention that will require a global response that they may be overcome. The real enemy then is humanity itself." Now, that was from a Club of Rome report in 1968. So actually, they thought that global warming would fit the bill. And that's what's happened.
And the scary thing, Mark, is that, you know, it's one thing to be kind of not condescending, but it's one thing to be annoyed by people for not seeing through it. It's one thing to get frustrated by people for not knowing this. But the vast majority of people can't know it, because all they get is, on a day-by-day basis, we're not just polluting the planet, we're actually changing it. We're kind of terraforming it in a way. Yeah. And of course, if you hear that, it's logical to think, oh, well, I better do something about it then. If they want me not to use the lawnmower more than once a month, well, I'll stop using the lawnmower. If they want me to stop doing this, well, sure, I'd better stop doing that. We're hard on people sometimes, but the hysteria is, for me, enough to understand why people just buy into it.
Well, yes, and it has been promoted as a religion, and it has got an apocalypse. So it's a religion with an apocalypse. And this is part of the depopulation agenda, because getting us down to the global billion is the aim. However, you're right, it's not people's fault if they've been mentored into this, but it is their fault if they will not look at other evidence. Yeah. That is their fault.
Here's the here's the $64 million question for both of you then. And two independent radio, I'm still fairly relatively new. I came out of commercial radio. How the hell do you persuade people then? Look, I've got friends in the business that still have fondness for me because they remember me. Windows will be Sanders, not too many of them, Richie. But there are one or two. There are one or two.
We both suffer from that.
But no, yeah, I can be a bit precious. Well, not precious, I can be difficult at times. But no, I do have mates I worked with back in the day that I get on with. But they think it's pie in the sky. I can't believe you entertain some of this stuff, Richie. And you know, Mark makes a good point there. There are articles in academia, there are scientific, the establishment's own research proves them wrong, and yet to get an old colleague or an old pal or even a brother or sister just to take a look at that, look, I'm not going to browbeat you, just have a look at that, they don't want this, Andy. What do
well,
you do?
Actually, Rich, you brought up a really good point, because earlier this year there was a climate trial which was brought by the governors in San Francisco, yeah, in California, and it was all brought to court, and the judge basically laughed the IPCC predictions out of a court. In other words, what the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change are saying with their models and their projections, and what you're saying about London being 10 metres underwater or whatever they're going to say, is laughable. And we have the scientific evidence that can counter all of that. I am not a scientist, however, I do research, and I have taught myself to think critically. And if you can't think critically about this, it means you're actually immersing yourself in it as a religion. And that is a problem. So to see outside the box is the main thing. The accepted corridor of opinion is a square box, and anything outside that is being ridiculed. However, we've just given you information there. The climate trial this year was basically kicked out of the court.
That's right.
Lawsuits in the US were brought by young activists in several California cities, and basically they relied on IPCC consensus data, and it was all proved to be completely wrong in the court. However, guess what, Richie? They forgot to switch the camera on to record we have no record of it, but we do have the court records, and anyone can look that up. And this is where the big myth of the oil companies being in charge of the fossil fuel industry came up. As another thing that's quite interesting about this agenda is it's all about energy. It's about energy in every sense of the word. It's about the control and management of all assets and all energy. This is from 1956, Russian scientist Professor Vladimir Porfiriev. He announced that crude oil and natural petroleum gas have no intrinsic connection with biological matter originating near the surface of the earth. They are primordial materials which have been erupted from great depths. They then started drilling for oil below the surface areas where they normally find it, down to 40,000 feet, and guess what? There's plenty of oil there. So this thing about fossil fuel is another myth.
Nonsense.
That people will talk about, and they'll say they call them fossil fuels. Well, newsflash, everybody, they're not fossils, and you can research that.
You can research that.
All of this stuff is basically consensus reality, and we are living in the post-truth world, so there is no reality coming out. You're absolutely right, Richie.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Sandy, just can you answer a question, Sandy? I've had a question from a listener. Sorry to cut across you there, but if I don't ask the questions, I'll be hammered for it later on. Mandy Kennedy is listening to this in Drogheda. In on the east coast of the Republic of Ireland. Nice to hear you from you today, Mandy. She asks, can we attribute this agenda to the interference in... let me just bring this up. It's a long-winded email there now. I want to synopsize this. She's basically asking Mandy... sorry, Mandy, for saying long-winded. It's about six paragraphs to it. She's asking, effectively, trying to change the way sexual education is taught in schools, and asking children to consider, you know, their genders and all this sort of stuff, which I don't want to get too deeply into because I've had a lot to say on that, and I've annoyed a lot of people because I've said so much about it. But Mandy's asking, is this all, again, connected to the agenda you're talking about?
Absolutely. I mean, everything that's wrong in the world is connected. And that sounds like a very blanket thing to say. But from what I can see that's happening, everything that is going wrong in our world is all connected to this agenda, including the destruction of the genders, which is a really big one, which I know you've gone into in other shows. But absolutely, Mandy, it is. It is a form of dividing us and distracting us. And destroying gender, that they want gender gone, and I find this particularly worrying.
Yeah, creating more and more,
you know, it's everywhere, and I feel that people will wake up, because I believe that with what's going on with the 5G and the smart cities and the Internet of Things, people are beginning to see, as soon as it actually affects them personally, they're going to start saying, well, hang on, no, we're not having this. And that is the hope that we have, that this will actually not happen, because people will wake up and say, enough's enough, this is crazy town, you know?
Yeah, I've no doubt. Yeah. As it becomes more apparent, and somebody once said to me that as this gets closer to where they wanted to go, they can't hide it anymore. I think a couple of people have said that to me in recent years, including Mark there. Just before Mark comes back in, Bristol tomorrow, folks, midday at ARC. Sandy Adams, Piers Corbyn and Mark Windows. It's vital stuff, you know. I absolutely endorse this. If you're going to be in and around Bristol tomorrow, or if you're in a nearby town or city and you can make it, it's only a couple of pints of beer. That's all it is to get in. And you'll find the tickets at eventbrite.co.uk. That's where you'll get tickets for it. But I'm sure if you turn up tomorrow, they'll try and make room for you. If you're in the area, go to windowsontheworld.net or eventbrite.co.uk. The event is entitled The Bigger Picture. Sandy Adams, Mark Windows and Piers Corbyn. Mark, do you want to come back in on that?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Richie. Yes, it is very important stuff, and everything is linked. This is the strange thing about it for most people, in that they get compartmentalized information from the media, but the actual gender stuff is all part of it. Because if you look at predictions made by people like Huxley, look at Brave New World, look at what's happening now, what they're doing is they're taking away people's ability to even think. And they're doing it under the banner of diversity and empowerment, which mean the opposite. Diversity means monoculture, the same. Empowerment means disempowerment. It means everybody is absolutely hamstrung and cannot comment on anything without it being described as hate. This is why we have the police, who will not come out if there's a serious crime, but they will sit there all day on computers monitoring social media for so-called hate speech, which cannot be defined. So again,
I'm going to give you a little bit of shit there now, my friend. You know, you know how much respect I have for you, but I'm going to give you a little bit of shit now, because police officers do listen to this. Now, I'm not saying, look, that this is not Chris Evans' breakfast show. We don't have millions of listeners, obviously not, but I do have police officers who listen to it, and they say, you're always kicking the police, Richie. Now, my friend Mr. Windows there said they won't come out for a serious crime, but they'll mess around with so-called hate speech crimes on Twitter. The second part of that, I have no doubt, is right. Might be a tad unfair to say they won't come out for serious crime. Go ahead.
Well, they've already admitted they won't come out for serious crime, and that's been pushed in the papers every day to keep the fear going. I'm not knocking what the police are meant to be. I'm just stating that this is part of an agenda. And our mutual friend David Icke brought this up years ago with the lecture from Dr. Richard Day in 1969 at Mount Sinai Hospital. I've covered that on the show. The talk is called The New Barbarians, where he turned off his microphone. He told everyone to turn off their recording devices if they had any. And he told them what the future was going to be. And he said that there was going to be a feeling of lawlessness brought into cities, which would create fear. He said, however, that the police state would increase its powers, but there was going to be more lawlessness. And all of this stuff has been predicted, even down to people running around and wearing training shoes. In 1969, he said, in the future, you get people running everywhere in training shoes. that's just a minor issue. But if you look at the more serious things he brought up, he was absolutely right. So how did he know this in 1969? Because these people have a 50 or 60 year plan. We have a very short time span. We think in terms of the 70 years we've been alive, and we think it's a long time. The Earth is 4.5 billion years old. That's the next estimation. So when people come and make all of these kind of dramatic insinuations, civilization has risen and fallen. We know nothing about it. I've looked into ancient history. The further you go back, even if you go back 500 years, or go back even a couple of hundred years, and you will find huge problems with finding out things that have happened in history.
It's mind-boggling. Now, mind-boggling. Can I just... I take your point, by the way, about the police. And I was damn glad of the police a few weeks ago when I had an accident. But look, I take your point. And Mandy might come in on this, Mark. Sorry to cut across you. Excuse me, Sandy. But I'm thinking of Mandy, the email.
Yeah.
Sandy.
I've sort of got a slightly different view on the police. I feel, because I have to work with them in my business quite a bit, that actually they're completely disempowered. They are underfunded, completely disempowered. And it's being set up to fail. That's the way I see it.
Yeah.
It's being set up to fail so that they can actually privatise the whole damn lot. So we will have thugs on our streets, paid for.
Paid thugs, which, to be fair, Mark Windows has said in the past. Can I just ask, to give Mark his credit, he has said that. It's not, you meet a police officer, generally they're nice people, they want to do a good job. Sandy, I want to talk about what Mark said, though, about hate crime. Didn't South Yorkshire Police recently tweet and ask people to report non-crime hate speech incidents to them? So in theory, if Sandy Adams is in Yorkshire today, I can phone up South Yorkshire Police. And Sandy Adams said to me over the phone, she called me a big, baldy, ignorant Irish bastard. And they might take that seriously.
They might,
even though it's true. But they might take it seriously. That's terrifying, isn't it?
I mean, it's ludicrous. It's an attack on freedom of opinion, of freedom of speech. They just want a compliant nation of people that don't have an opinion.
Well, it's a great way of shutting down debate, you see.
Yeah.
That's the main thing. It shuts down debate and it shuts down viewpoints. So again, it's the narrow opinion of corridor, that's they've accepted, the accepted opinion you're allowed to have. Well, this is the main problem with it all. I mean, we cover all this in the talks. The whole political correctness agenda is a huge part of it.
Mm.
And it's social engineering. That's all it is. It's quite simple, really. If you look at this, as I said, as a management concept, that's all it is. Think of managing a business. How do you want to keep people in line? Well, let's talk about Delphi technique. Every public meeting is held using Delphi technique with facilitators. We've seen this at these council public meetings all over London. So basically what you do is you control both sides. You control the whole narrative, and that's what it's all about.
I'm thinking of something when you're talking about political correctness. It's just a very quick anecdote. Going back years ago, I went to St. Saviour's Primary School in Ballybeg in Waterford in the Republic of Ireland many, many moons ago. And not long after I left to go to secondary school, high school, I used to go back to the school to see one of the teachers once or twice. And there was a funny incident involving a child. So this is back now in the very late 80s. A child asked another child who was black in the school. Now, there wouldn't have been very many black people in Waterford. And the child was asking, a five-year-old child was asking another five-year-old child who was black, why were they black? And was there something wrong with your skin? And why don't you wash your face? Now, this is harmless, childish stuff from a five-year-old. And at the time, it was a big joke and everybody laughed about it. And the child was told, well, listen, you know, this child, her mother comes from Nigeria and this is where Nigeria is on a map and, you know, people there have darker skin and all of that. I'm thinking today there'd be outrage, wouldn't there? There'd be outrage. Somebody might be expelled. Somebody might be fired over that, you know. Something so harmless. You can't say anything. And it imposes...
You can't say anything without offending someone, yeah.
And it imposes a kind of a terrible kind of self-censorship where before you say anything to anybody, you go through about five different possibilities of how they might react instead of just saying it, Mark. Just say it.
It's social engineering, and it comes out of the psychological society, and I do go into that. There was a great book that came out about 20, 30 years ago. I think it was in the late 70s, fellow called Martin L. Gross. It's called The Psychological Society, How Psychology Has Steered Every Aspect of Western Life. And this is the result of it when we're talking about these issues, which we shouldn't really have to be talking about. We should be taught to critically think. We're not taught to critically think. The old Prussian way of education was that 1% of the population would be taught to think. The rest of them didn't need to. But
they would serve and toil.
Exactly a similar position. Because, all right, when they want people to do jobs such as administration, then they don't need to be able to think in this critical way. However, everybody has the opportunity to learn how to think. And that's one of the things that we kind of advocate, really, is that people should have their own minds, make their own minds up about things, and get out of collectivism. We are individual collectivists. In other words, we work as individuals as part of a collective, and that is part of the solution of these talks. And I get into that at the end, and there's several groups up and down the country who are now using this little manifesto we've put together, which takes them outside of the box. In other words, they cannot be labeled because of the use of the language. And we are in basically what you could describe as a psychological battle. That's what a lot of this stuff is about. And being able to cut through that is essential. So in other words, the use of language and the way that we take apart propaganda is extremely important if it's going to have any effect. And that's also where the fun is.
Brilliant stuff, Mark. I'm sitting there listening to that, and as you're saying it, a picture is coming to my mind, and I'm going to ask Sandy about this. Sandy, listen to what Mark was saying there about groups thinking outside the box, people coming together that can't be labelled, individual thinking as opposed to collective. He's absolutely spot on. While he's saying this, Sandy, I'm listening to him and I'm thinking, I know for a fact that in 2019 we're going to be contacted by Ofcom. Now, Mark knows this as well. What's coming next year or in 2020 is we're going to be told that it doesn't matter that you're not part of a network anymore, that you're not a program in a linear schedule. It doesn't matter that you've got your studio at home. You should have a license. This is coming down the road, and I'll tell you why. Because what you've said to me today, I agree with. Okay, it can make for boring TV or radio. I don't think it's boring. You know, it's great to be challenging people, but I agree with you. There's no doubt I agree with you. And it's well thought out, it's well researched, and it's moderate. What happens when the government, through the Officials Communication Act, says, look, it doesn't matter what you think about climate change anymore. Remember what the BBC did a few weeks ago? Gave out a diktat to all its producers to say the climate change debate is closed. You don't have to provide balance anymore. So what happens if in 2020, Mr. Windows, Ms. Adams gets a knock on the door, Mr. Allen? You can't say that anymore, guys. Look, we don't want to be putting you down. We don't want to be stopping you talking. But look, this is harmful. It's going to kill us all, this climate change. Therefore, you can't say this anymore. This is going to happen, I think. What are we going to do then, Sandy? Stupid question.
We've just got to keep going. I don't know. Maybe you have to just balance that against, you know, the alternative, which is to get everybody believing the lies, you know, and the post-truth world. You know, I would lay down my life for this. I couldn't give a damn, because quite honestly, if you're going to give up at the first hurdle, if they say you can't do that, my reaction immediately is, oh, well, yes, I will continue. And maybe it needs that, you know, maybe it needs that for people to just carry on.
Well, the first thing you should do is ask them for their qualifications and whether they are qualified in climate science. What I would do then is phone up one of the climate scientists who I know, who used to contribute to the IPCC reports. The last two, the AR4 and AR5, I would recommend anyone read them, because none of the predictions have come true or are likely to come true. And this is what people are basing their opinions on.
Yeah.
Anyone can have an opinion, but facts are totally different. I would then get them to talk to, say, the world's leading expert in sea levels, who I do know, and who's roundly debunked all of this stuff about rising sea levels. I would then get on to other scientists who I know through Piers Corbyn, and all these people have been respected within the institutions which they are attached to, and which many have been thrown out of, and they do not understand. Now, there's more and more people who are actually out there talking about this. A very good example, I was talking to a friend of mine the other night. This 10 years ago, Richie, he got a knock on the door in the middle of the night by some guy clad in black who threatened him on behalf of the security services. There's too many people now for them to threaten because this post-truth nonsense that's coming out every day through the media is laughable. And I would encourage anyone just to start thinking critically about it. You know, just have a look at what's going on and look at the alternative view. Basically, look at facts. We only deal in facts. If people come to our talks, if people listen to my show, I put out facts. I'm not saying that I'm 100% right 100% of the time, but I have a better track record than the mainstream media, Richie, and so do you, because we're putting out stuff that is factual.
Brilliant, yeah. Brilliant. And you know, yeah. Sandy's right, by the way. I wouldn't endorse anybody collapsing at the first hurdle. I just think about the possibility that, you know, maybe in a couple of years, programmes like ours might have to be, you know, domiciled elsewhere. You know, we might have to go elsewhere to do it. They're talking about taking equipment and stuff. You know, I mean, look, I'm nobody important. It's always been a platform. And I'm not modest. I've never been a modest man. I tell the truth, I've never been important. I'm small fry. But the programme and the ability to be able to listen to people like you is important. And yeah, I believe that it will come to in a couple of years. And I'm no Alex Jones fearmonger, you know, with this nonsense. But I do believe that they will say, look, you've got to do it this way. And failing that, well, your licence has been suspended. And we know what that leads to. That leads to, we'll come and take your equipment. Now, Mark will remember when Ofcom insisted that TPV have a licence, they gently but firmly said that if we were to ignore them, even though we were an online entity, that they would, you know, get a restraining order of sorts against this broadcasting. I mean, it's crazy stuff, you know. But that's, yeah. I mean, just looking further ahead. But you're right, Sandy. To be melting or wilting in the face of that is to give in to them. Nobody should ever give in to them.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that we've got to call out the lies, and we've got to be really strong about calling out the lies, because we have been lied to on a monumental scale. And when people realise that, I think we will get support, and they won't be able to shut us down. I mean, that's the aim, is to literally call out this whole agenda so that people will begin to wake up. And when it starts affecting them seriously, when, you know, when the whole, you know, 5G and the smart cities agenda starts to hit them, they will begin to realise that we're living in a Stasi under their rule.
There'll be no hiding from it. And no. I actually agree. I reckon a lot of commercial and well-known broadcasters and writers who might think that people like me and people like Mark and yourself, that we might be as nutty as a box of frogs. However, I believe there are... No, and they're entitled to think that. They're wrong, but they're entitled to think it. I have no doubt they will, some of them, say, well, this is a step too far. You can't silence these people just because you think their arguments are ludicrous. Now, we've got about 3 minutes left, Mark. I want to get you back in. I want to mention again, the bigger picture will be in Bristol tomorrow at midday till 6 p.m. That's tomorrow, Saturday 6th. It's at ARC on 27 Broad Street. Go to eventbrite.co.uk for tickets. The bigger picture, I've put a link out to it on Twitter. Or go to windowsontheworld.net. Mark also links to where you can get tickets. But I'm sure if you turn up tomorrow and you say that you want to come in, you want to hear what's going on, I'm sure they'll accommodate you. Mark,
we've got
really
plenty
important.
Of room, Richie. We have plenty of room. We've sold a lot of tickets, but we still have plenty of room. Brilliant. And we'll make room for anyone who wants to come.
Well, listen, I'm proud of what you're doing. I think it's fantastic. It's one thing to talk about what's coming down the line, which people like me do, but I don't have the minute, the tiny small print details that you guys have, and it's important. And now I do, having listened to you for the last hour or so. So I'm really glad that you came on today. And I'm glad to have met you, Sandy. I'm sure you'll have a brilliant day tomorrow. I'm sure you'll meet lots of really interesting people. And hopefully, and I have no doubt, many of them will go away with maybe not a different point of view, but with the commitment to look in other directions for their information. Great to have you on today.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Richie.
Have a fantastic day tomorrow. Brilliant stuff. Thanks, Mark. And thanks, Sandy. Sandy Adams and Mark Windows there tomorrow in Bristol. That's tomorrow, tomorrow the 6th of October, Saturday at ARC on Broad Street. The bigger picture, Piers Corbyn the meteorologist, the scientist, of course, he's Jeremy's brother, Mark Windows and Sandy Adams, putting into perspective what the Global Action Plan is, what it means for your town, for your city, for your communities, for your streets. It's vital stuff. It really is. I can't say that enough. So check them out tomorrow in Bristol. If you're there or near Bristol, take my word for it. You couldn't spend a better Saturday afternoon than going to meet those guys tomorrow. Right, that's nearly it for this programme then, which we put on in lieu of my absence on Monday. Thanks a million for listening to it today. I really appreciate your company as well. For those of you who undoubtedly came in late on it, as happens all the time, I will have this on podcast in around about 15 minutes. It's a very quick turnaround, so it'll be on Podomatic and iTunes and all the rest of it in around about 15 minutes time. It'll be on YouTube as well before the afternoon is out, so do share it. And if you're on Twitter and Facebook, do post the link to the Bigger Picture event in Bristol tomorrow. Give a leg up there to Mark Windows, Piers Corbyn and Sandy Adams. They've sold quite a few tickets, which is marvellous, but it's a big venue and there is room, so go and see them if you're in Bristol and be educated. Why not? All right, okay. What's there left for me to say then? Well, just briefly, Gemma O'Doherty, the Irish journalist, will be on the programme on Monday. And Gemma's a very, very interesting woman. She's running for president. Now, the Irish president is the Irish head of state. It's a figurehead position. It's an elected position, but the powers of the president are limited basically to dissolving the Dáil, calling an election, effectively. Somebody's going to correct me on that now. It's been so long since I talked about any of this stuff, this legislative stuff. But there is an election. The current Irish president is a man called Michael D. Higgins. He's looking for another term. But among those standing is Gemma O'Doherty. Now, she's a fascinating woman. And one of the things she's been doing lately, which I'm very proud of, is she's been asking questions of the health authorities in Ireland, in questions around how the families of girls who have been affected by the HPV Gardasil vaccine. She's a very well-known journalist, Gemma, an award-winning journalist, running for president, and is asking questions on behalf of the families of the girls, of the many hundreds of girls whose lives have been impacted very badly after they received the Gardasil HPV vaccine. So Gemma's going to come on the programme on Monday. And I've got quite a few guests, I think, lined up already, but I don't have the diary to hand to tell you all about them. But it's going to be a good week next week on the programme. But you'll hear from me before Monday anyway, because I'll be with you on Sunday morning at 11 a.m. UK time for Sunday View. As usual, on Sunday, I'll be reviewing the front pages of the Sunday tabloids and broadsheets, and I'll be looking at some of the stories in those newspapers as well. It's an hour-long programme, Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. UK time on the usual channels, Fab Radio 2, TriggerWarning.tv, RichieAllen.co.uk, TuneIn Radio as well. That's one that you should have. If you've got a smartphone, and God love you, none of us maybe should have smartphones, but pretty much everybody has, get the TuneIn Radio app. It's free. There's nothing nefarious about it. But hundreds of thousands of radio stations around the world use TuneIn. It's brilliant. It's a very robust app. I'm on there. But also, download Cogent Radio. The Cogent Radio app by Hayden Hewitt. Cogent Radio, it's absolutely amazing. Not only that, but there's no advertisements. There's no data mining. There's no cookies or any of that nonsense. The Cogent Radio app is another app. And Hayden has got plenty of very good programmes on the Cogent Radio app as well. Have a great weekend. I'm off to see Jeff Lynne's ELO this weekend at Manchester Arena. I couldn't be happier about that. Massive fan. Never seen him, have been for years. So I'm going to close out with this and wish you a lovely weekend. Thanks for tuning in this Friday. Look after yourselves and one another, and I'll speak to you on Sunday for Sunday View. Thanks to Mark Windows and Sandy Adams. Have a great day tomorrow, guys. Bye now.
Manchester.